Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Matt Brown, 17 years of all career fire service experience, currently a firefighter paramedic on truck 202 for the Sierra Vista Fire Department in Arizona. Truth bombs, mic drops, nuggets, and gems alert for the conversation Matt and I had. We didn't even put a dent in the list of topics we wanted to talk about, so I'm going to have Matt on again for a part two. All I'm going to say is we all need to have Matt's mindset when it comes to the job and all aspects of it. With that, I gladly present Mr. Matt Brown.
Matthew Brown. I started in the fire department 17 years ago. I was working at a local car dealership. Had a couple of friends who had just gotten on the local departments. Kind of always had an interest in the fire service. I had my three uncles were all EMTs. And at that time in the early 90s, we had reserves. So I had three of them that were all EMT reserves for the city that I work for now. And also the first department I started working for, Fry Fire District. So I was kind of around it growing up. A lot of my coaches were firefighters, or I played with firefighter kids. So the fire truck was always at football or baseball or basketball practice. My current fire chief was actually my JV basketball or freshman basketball coach. So we had a good relationship with him and everything. And so never thought I would get into it because I have asthma. So I tried to go the military route because I come from a very military family. Was basically told, hey, man, you're not going to cut it in the military before I even went to MEPS. So took an interest in automotive. Went to college for automotive for a year, started working on painting cars and working in race shops, building race cars and stuff. Kind of had a painter that I was working with, this good friend of mine, kind of told me like, hey man, like you're going through the academy. Like, what are you going through the academy for? I was like, well, they all convinced me to kind of be a reserve. So I figured it's just some side money, pick up a couple of shifts as a reserve firefighter. He's like, hey man, you got a son on the way. So my oldest son was my girlfriend at the time was pregnant with my son. So he's like, you got a kid on the way. Like, yeah, we're making good money here, man, but you don't have benefits. You don't have retirement. I'm like 19. I'm making good money at a dealership. Like, what do I need that for? And he's like, bro, you need to consider this, man. And chief pulled us in one day and was like, hey man, we got a safer grant. We got five spots. Like, you know, we're going to interview all of you reserve candidates for it. And I didn't have my fire one and two. I was in EMT class. So I'm like, oh, I'm out, right? I'm not going to get it. Because I don't have anything. And so through the attrition of the academy, he came to me one day and was like, hey man, like I got the fifth spot. I need to fill it. I know you're in EMT class. I spoke to your EMT instructor. Like, do you want the job? And I was like, I don't know, chief, let me go back. And I go back to the dealership after lunch, and our painter Brandon was like, what are you doing? Like, pack up your stuff, dude. Like, you're gone. Like, you don't work here no more. So put my 2 weeks in, jumped into the academy, to the full-time academy. And honest to God, man, here I am 17 years later, still in it, still loving it. It's been awesome. You know, I have a great career. It's taken me all over the country, met so many people, networked. I owe the fire service my entire, like, adult life. That's all I know. 19 years old, I came in, raised my kids in here. Been married into it. I've had ups, I've had downs, I've had failures, I've had successes. So spent 13 years at the district down here. Left actually as the engineer. Was an engineer there for 6 years. So I spent 7 years as a firefighter. Went to paramedic school, got my paramedic, got promoted shortly after that. Actually had a crazy year. Finished paramedic. Actually, I say I had my middle son. A month later, finished my paramedic. A month later, tested for promotion, made engineer. Never looked back. And then about 4 years ago, transitioned over to the city side. Been 17 years there. Firefighter, paramedic over there. It's been a blast.
Awesome. Love the story. Love hearing it. For those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about Sierra Vista, the size, stations, personnel?
Okay. All right. So we tell people all the time, like, we're about an hour south of Tucson, right on the Mexico border. We're about 10 miles from the Mexico border. So all those container walls and all that stuff you see, there's a lot literally like 5 miles from my house that has all those Connex boxes they were building them with. At the district, my CON butted up right to the wall. I always tell people, if you've seen the movie Tombstone, Tombstone's about 20 minutes to the east of us. So we're in a real small area. We always tell people we got Fort Huachuca down here, which is one of the MI and UAV showcase areas for the military. So we have a military base that butts up right against us. So yeah, we currently right now for the city side, we have four stations. We always kind of joke three and a half-ish. We have three fully staffed firefighter stations. We have an EMS station that just opened up our station four. But then we're unique because we actually staff two ambulances on the base. So I guess you could say we have six-ish stations, but we have three fire full-time staff firefighting stations and three EMS stations.
Okay, so your EMS stations are strictly EMS
EMS.
based.
Yep. Yep.
Understood.
Yep. But I mean,
Okay.
like, so all the fire stations, we run a box and a fire apparatus out of there. We got about 81 personnel. I had to double check with Chief this morning. So we have 45 fire personnel, 27 EMS personnel, and then eight admins, which include like chiefs, all of our chiefs, and like our admin administration.
Okay.
So we run about, we were just shy of 9,700 calls last year. But I have a feeling the way numbers are going, we've been progressing. I wouldn't be shocked if we break the 10,000 mark this year. And it's
Okay.
crazy to think when I started at the district, I remember when we broke like 4,000 calls, we were like, oh my God, we were so busy this year. And now we're up at the 9,700 mark. And I'm like, man, I can't even think back to when we ran 44,000 calls.
Okay. And so on the fire apparatus side, what's your minimum staffing?
So three. We always try to maintain three. Four is ideal. Everybody technically has four at their stations, but with leave and ed leave and all this, we're at three on the fire apparatus and two on the ambulance.
Okay. All right. And if a structural box comes in Sierra Vista's first immediate due, what's your complement? What's on that run card?
So on that run car, we get three engines, a medic unit, a battalion, and the truck.
Okay.
And so we have the military base Fort Huachuca, they have three fire stations. Two that can kind of come downtown and work with us. One is the airport technically. So those guys, we don't really see them very much. But they have a ladder truck. So we have like a west side and an east side kind of ladder truck complement. So if it's more on the west side of town, their ladder truck will take it. If it's on our east side, we take it. And then we pretty much run all ladder calls for the district.
Okay.
So anything south, we take and what we call an ambulance or a fire box. So they have to state, do they have fire personnel on the box or do we have EMS personnel on the box?
Okay. And are the personnel on the paramedic units, are they allowed to engage in fire suppression work, or do they have to strictly remain paramedics?
It depends on the day, to be
Okay.
honest. We try to get our paramedics in, obviously, but we also know the importance of having a firebox there to be medical, rehab, if something gets critical. But I mean, we have had them where, we're very outlying to each other. So sometimes your second due truck could be 10, 12 minutes. So I've been on the box plenty of times, and the captain's like, get forward, let's go. So we carry air packs on there. We carry tools. We all have our gear. So as long as we have fire personnel on there, we'll what we call stack up. We'll stack up on the line and we'll go help the first due engine or truck and get to work. And then as units get on scene, we can kind of put the medic guys back into a medical sector area, than being part of the fire. But we've also had, we're very lit staff limited on fire, so we've had it where, two rounds of bottles, it's fine. Like, hey man, get the ambulance guys in there for a round of bottles and, give the engine one guys a break for a second. So we try to utilize it. So there, I don't think we have a hard and fast rule on it, but I know our VCs do a good job that if we pull a guy's forward, we're calling a second box in right away, just in case if we have that mayday, we have that victim come out, we're ready to be able to respond to that.
Okay. And you did mention when on shift with you being a firefighter paramedic, do you do half your shifts on the fire apparatus and then the other half you're on the box? Is that how it always
Yeah,
is?
we try. We kind of flip flop. So, like, I have another firefighter medic. So, like, one day I'm on the box, one day he's on the truck. The next day we'll swap. Some stations that they have one medic, you're on the box for a little bit longer, more shifts. I just did a stint over at our station one. I was lone firefighter medic, so I spent majority of my time on the box. But when we had the civilian EMS guys come in, they were quick to get me off the box and let me go get a shift on the engine and stuff. So we try to flip flop back and forth. There's no, again, set in stone on how it works, but we try to make it fair around.
Okay. And the schedule type that you guys work.
We're a 3-4.
I'm trying
So
to figure out what
basically
that
three
means.
four. So we work a 24 hour shift on, 24 off, 24 on, 24 off, 24, and then
Oh.
work 4 days straight. So we have 4 days off.
Gotcha.
So we work three over that 5 day period, and then we have that 4 day off. At the district, we ran a 48-96.
Okay.
So that was definitely a change for me of coming back to a 3-4 schedule.
Right. Okay. So let's perfect little segue. Let's hit on that. So, a lot of individuals are, I don't want to say a lot, but there's a good number of individuals who tend to be on a department for a while and then they bow out and they go somewhere else. You have that experience of transitioning and leaving a department. So if you don't mind, if you can hit on that a little bit.
Yeah, it's not easy. I'll say that right off the bat. I always tell people, I'm very thankful for my time at the district. I came into to Fry Fire District as a 19-year-old kid with very minimal life experience who knew nothing about life. Like I thought, I went to college for a year. I started working in the shops. I was around things. I thought I knew it all. But I definitely owe a big, hands off to the senior members of that department. To Chief Miller, who gave me an opportunity. Like I said, I didn't have Fire 1 and 2. I didn't have my EMT. So I only tested for one department at that time. I didn't know hearing these horror stories of the guys up in the valley. They're like, yeah, I've had my Fire 1 and 2 for 5 years, and I've tested for Phoenix, Mesa, Gilbert, Chandler, like all 25 departments in the valley. It's like, I haven't gotten a job yet. I'm like, really? I didn't even really test. Like, he pulled me in for an interview. He's like, do you want the job or not? So it was a huge eye opener for me when I started branching out of like what it took. I, like I said, everything in the fire service I have started with them. My paramedic, my driver, all my classes, things like that. So all my special teams came from the district. So it was tough. There was at that point we had gone through a transition of fire chiefs. We had an attrition of some of our senior members leaving. I'll admit it, I fell into a small rut in my career. Wasn't sure what the next step was going to be. I actually thought I was leaving to the valley. I had some opportunities up there. Had a couple injuries that didn't work out for me. Ended up, staying with my wife and I, getting together, raising the boys, and realizing, if I move to the valley, my sons are going to stay here. And my wife at the time, she was my fiance, she was like, nah, I'm not moving to the valley. So, big change for us. So, turned down those opportunities, stayed at the district a little bit longer, and then the city came calling and asked if I was still interested in testing. Did the testing process, and just one thing led to the next, and I ended up transferring because I felt it was what was the next best thing for my career. Hindsight's always 2020. There's good and bad. I'll tell that, and I'm pretty honest with that. It's the guys that I currently work with. There's things from the district that were a whole lot easier than working for a municipal department. There's things at the city that are way more protected than we have at the district. But I don't knock either one. They're doing the best of what we have. We have a great relationship between the two departments. I think it's getting back to being even stronger than ever. So we run automatic aid together. So almost transferring was like not too big of a deal because I knew 90% of the guys that I was working with coming over, and I still know, 90% of the guys that I run calls with daily. But I will tell people, you don't go out burning bridges because you never know when you're going to need those bridges again. And I know when I left, there was some burned bridges a little bit. But over time heals all wounds that I'm very thankful that I've been able to repair some of those bridges. I still go over there and I teach occasionally. They come in and do a lot of classes with us. So I still have a great relationship. One of my best friends is still the captain over there. I call him all the time and bust his balls. Our old B shift guys, as we say, they're all over there still. So I still talk to those guys at least once a week, see them on calls, things like that. So it's a good thing to have, but it's definitely, it was a tough transition at first.
I like how you mentioned earlier, the ups and downs of the fire service, man. We all have them. Like nobody, there's at least for me, I don't know anybody that can say that they've gone their entire career where they were 100% all in full throttle every single day. Like we all have different life events, different seasons of life. So, being 100% in all the time. I mean, if you're fortunate that you could say that you were like that, man, kudos to you. But we all have those ebbs and flows. So I love how you definitely hit on that.
Yeah, so I tell people all the time, like, so are you a paramedic?
I am not. I'm just a we're EMT
Okay.
basics.
So I tell people all the time, like, I'll tell you this, one of the hardest things you ever have to do is go to paramedic school once. Don't do it twice. I went through paramedic school twice. I completed the course, failed my national, thought I was getting out of the fire service, let it lapse. I'm getting out, I'm done. I don't want to be in here anymore. I'm gonna go do something else. I'm gonna head back to the shop. I'm gonna go back to racing or whatever it was at that time. And then 3 years later, I'm like, well, here I am still at the fire department. Okay, I'm back in the job. Tested for promotion. And they were like, hey man, you got beat because you don't have your medic. I'm like, well, I'll tell you this right now, chief. Like, I know I'll go back to medic school. He's like, you already went once. And I'm like, yep, I'll go back again. Watch me. I said, getting passed over for promotion was like a kick in the butt. And I put myself through paramedic school the second time. Didn't get any leave for it, had to pay for it all out of pocket initially. To show, like, hey man, like, look, I'm here and I'm back and I'm ready to be a contributing member to this department. And I put myself through medic school and then I tested for promotion the next time, blew it out of the water, got promoted to driver, loved it. One of the best positions I ever had. But then even hit another valley there, I had been a driver for a couple of years. That's right when we transitioned fire chiefs. I'm like, I don't know what I want to do. We all fall into that negative around the kitchen table. All so and so's doing this and so and so's doing that. Well, how come we're getting treated this way? And all the stuff that we all have in every single one of our firehouses, no one's immune to it. And my battalion chief, so at that time, our battalion chief was riding the truck with us. He wasn't a standalone at that time. So our BC was our captain. And he's like, we're sending you to this class. And I'm like, what is this class? Because I was in charge of hose and nozzles, and we're getting ready to explode. Management. It's an hour and a half away. You're going to drive up and back every day. And I'm like, what? Why am I going to this? Like, send somebody else. He's like, well, that's your area of responsibility, Matt. All right, whatever. So he sends me to this class, and it was 2016. We went to this class. Just me. Drive up there. It's an hour and a half away. I gotta leave here at like 5 o'clock in the morning. This instructor sends us this like kind of itinerary, and he's like, don't plan on leaving before it's dark. I'm like, what? And we all go to fire service. I was like, dude, we're out by like 3 o'clock, man. I'm like, we're done. He's like, don't plan on leaving before dark. Bring your packs, bring your gear, plan on being in gear, drink plenty of water. And I'm like, what are we doing? Whatever. So I go up there and I walk into this room, and it's hosted by one of our smaller districts up in Tucson. And so they're hosting it, walk into this classroom, and I see, like, you see the host agency there, but then I look around and I'm like, well, that's a captain, that's a chief. Like, so it's like all the training chiefs and like training captain and RTOs from the valley. So Mesa Fire, Scottsdale Fire, Chandler, Gilbert, like all the East Valley guys come over. And I'm like, what am I? And I'm like the only like random firefighter from somewhere else. And I'm like, how did I end up in this class? Like, what am I here for? And he walks in. His name's Chris Slayer, Battalion Chief Chris Slayer from Mesa Fire. Used to be the president of the Fire Nuggets. And if anybody's ever attended any of Chief Slayer's classes, the dude, he doesn't hold back any punches. He is a product of Brian Brush and Aaron Fields and all the top instructors. He knows them all by name. Walks into our class and he goes, "Let me just tell you guys something right off the bat. If you don't fucking like the job, tough. If you want to sit down and watch movies all day and watch a sports game," he goes, "get out of my fire station. If you don't want to pull stuff off the rig by 9 o'clock, you're never going to make it." And I'm like, "Who the heck is this guy?"
Right.
Like, just gets into us, like right off the bat. I'm looking around, I'm like, "You got guys on here that have like 10, 20 years on the job." Like, wow, okay. And you could just feel his passion when he walked in the room. When you'd hear his training cadre speak, and I'll give a shout out to those guys. They're his initial training cadre: Chase Wright, Mike Davis, Jordan Reardon, like the Jason Reardon. Those guys are like just top-notch dudes now in Mesa. And they're just like, "Yeah, man, hey, Slayer speaking, we're all speaking, And I didn't know any of these names he's throwing up: Brian Brush, Ray McCormack, Dennis Legeard. He's quoting all these guys. I'm like, "Who are these guys?" And I'm a guy, I take notes. I sit in the front, I usually take notes. And I'm writing like, "Who are these guys? Who are these guys? All right, I gotta figure out who these guys are." Dude, it was one of the most life-changing events. So basically, his tactical host management was a mix of Brian Brush's exponential engine and Aaron Fields' nozzle forward, and threw them together and taught us over a 3-day period. We pulled hose for 8 hours a day. And I'm watching captains, chiefs, everybody out there. He's out there pulling hose with us. Man, it was life-changing. It sparked me. I struck up a friendship with him. He's like, "Hey, man, you coming to nozzle forward?" I was like, "What is that?" Like, "Aaron Fields is coming in February up to Mesa. Like, we're hosting it. Like, sign up." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." Slid my credit card right there, signed up. Man, Chief Slayer's been taking me on his coattail to all kinds of courses ever since then, man. And definitely taught me how to branch out and get out of those peaks and valleys. But it has also showed me that there's a lot of resistance along the way that I'm sure we could touch on at some point. But
Hell yeah.
yeah, I owe a huge part of my career upswing lately to Chief Slayer and his cadre of friends that have definitely taken me into their inner circle.
And that's, I love hearing it because it's kind of like the same thing that happened to me when I attended my first fire conference. I didn't even know what the hell those things were. And I attended it. And then I'm talking to people around me who are like talking about the same shit, same issues, same problems I have. And then you hear these instructors speak, and they're just like nonchalantly, like, "Fuck the mutts, keep pushing forward. Like, this is our job. This is what we need to do. This is our responsibility. Do it." And I'm like, damn.
100%.
I'm like, holy
100%.
cow, man. But what I
I mean,
love that you stated, dude, was the fact that in that class, you had captains, chiefs, senior guys on the job out there 8 hours a day pulling hose. I don't know how many times I can say this. I don't know how many other ways I can say this. When firefighters see high-ranking officers out there in the field with the guys and girls getting dirty, getting gritty, there's nothing better for the department than to see that. Like, it's a huge motivational, and I know motivational is a bad word, but it is a huge factor for us firefighters to see that. Like, if we see that, it's like, I will go the distance for this department because they actually care. So when you get promoted and you forget about that, you don't know what it's like to be one of the guys. You don't come and ride the trucks. You forget all that aspect of it. You lose sight of why this job is great. And that's awesome that you got to see that.
absolutely, man. And like I said, a lot of those guys that I see in this class, I still, 8 years later, go to Valley classes and I see them. They've all either now the senior ranking captains or have moved up to battalion chiefs. Some of them are even deputy chiefs now. Some of them are getting ready to retire. But like, I mean, like to be a training chief and some of the training captains up there, you've had to have some time in that rank. It's not like we promoted you to captain and you're going over there. So in the Valley, if you have to have a couple of years on to move over to the training cadre. So those weren't just brand new captains that threw over there. So those guys had 10, 15 years on probably before they even came into that class, man. And to see that, it's something that stuck with me. And down here, I have some great captains and some great chiefs, even my current battalion chief, Josh Meeker, man. He has no problem putting the gear on and being a student in any one of our courses. Like, he gets so intimidating sometimes where I'm like, "You've been on the fire service almost longer than I've been alive." and you know way more about what I'm speaking about. He goes, no, preach it, keep talking, show me what I'm doing wrong. And he'll jump into drills with us all the time, you know. So I get to see it every day on my shift, and in my department. A lot of all of our captains, man, they try to be engaged as much as possible. So it's awesome.
Awesome, man. I love it. I love it. So, in your opinion, how important is outside training, man? Like, for others that don't know, who think, you know, every department, I'm sure yearly they have their training schedule made up of this topic for this quarter, this month, or whatever. But getting outside of your wheelhouse, man, how big is that?
Man, it's amazing. Like I tell people, like I've always somehow worked for the training chief or the training captain for most of my career. When I was at the district, our battalion chief was in charge of training, so I feel like we had the upper hand on the training schedule. But until I started branching out, I didn't realize what I didn't know. You know, we're all taught in our area, and a prime example was smooth bores, right? I'd seen them upstairs in our old like cache. What the hell are these things? You know, these are from the 80s. We haven't ran these. And we ran 2.5 fog nozzles on our engines at that time. And if anybody's ever picked up a 2.5 fog nozzle at 100 PSI and 200 gallons a minute, 250 gallons a minute, nobody ever wants to pick up a 2.5. We didn't pull 2.5 in the district for the longest time. But we go to this class and Slayer's like, all right, we're gonna pull 2.5. And I'm like, what? Nobody pulls 2.5. He's like, with a smooth bore, I'm all, what? He's like, and then you're gonna flow it and move it by yourself. And I'm all, yeah, you're out of your mind, dude. Last time I was on a 2.5, there's like three of us that were each like 160, 180 pounds, and we were getting our butts kicked. Like, no way we're gonna flow this, and I'm gonna float by myself. Man, he opened up my eyes to low pressures, smooth bores, flowing and moving, all that stuff. And I'm like, yo, we are doing stuff wrong. Like, not necessarily wrong, but like, yo, there's a better way for us to be doing this crap. So I come back and they're like, you're out of your mind, Matt. You're psycho. You have no clue what you're talking about. I'm like, I'm telling you, I did it and we could do this. So yeah, I think hitting those outside trainings, just one, to hear somebody else preach something. I mean, I've been to conferences where they're speaking the same language, you know, and it kind of reaffirms, like, if you're not getting much out of it, which I call BS, if you say you're not getting much out of it, that's bullshit. Like, no way. You could always get something out of it. Like, but then it also reaffirms, if somebody's doing something very similar to you, then it reaffirms that, hey, maybe we are on the right track of what we're doing at our house. But then hearing other people talk, like, oh yeah, we do it this way. You know, it's not, sometimes it's not even the instructor up there that's going to give you the insight. It's the people in the crowd, you know, sitting at other tables, introducing yourselves to other departments. Like, you know, that's how I kind of network in the Valley. Like, the Valley is very open to us of like, you guys need something, they'll send it to us. Like, those guys have bigger training budgets than what any of us small departments have. I can pick up the phone to call, hey, you guys run this. Like, how does it work? How does it, oh, here, let me send you pictures. Let me send you the document. Let me send you this. Let me send, like, they've done the work because they have extra manpower sometimes and admin that let them get this stuff done. Where some of us smaller guys, we don't have the admin to pull a guy off the truck and be like, hey, for the next 4 months, you're going to figure out hose, nozzles, pressures, and loads. Okay. Yeah. Like, we can't do that. So tapping into these guys that have already done it, they are more than willing to give you information. You just have to be willing to open yourself up and get some closed doors on you. Like, don't get me wrong. Not every time I've reached out to somebody have they been super open and honest. Like, I've met my fair share of assholes along the way. They're like, I'm not telling you how to do that. Figure it out on your own. But I would say 90% of the guys are like, dude, let me ship it out to you. Oh, hey, let me get you in touch with this guy. Let me get you in touch with this guy. And you just network. My wife, man, love her to death. My wife is like, you know way too many people. And if you don't know them, you know somebody that they know, or they know somebody that you know. And you just intermix with these guys, you know. And she's like, I think we were at the mall one time in Phoenix. And I ran into a captain. I'm like, hey, what's up? And she goes, how do you know him? I'm like, oh, we went to a conference together. She's like, what? I was like, yeah, he's a captain for Phoenix. He's on Engine 15. She's like, are you kidding me right now? And I'm like, sorry. Like, you know, it's just how it goes. So the outside training, man, the get the knowledge, to get it from other places that do it, you know, high rises. We just went to the, you know, Phoenix Incident Management Symposium. Clark Lamping from Clark County came down. One of our guys is from Clark County. So I asked him, I said, hey man, like, how good is this dude? And he was like, yo, he's the guy. Like, he is the guy who has written that stuff and worked on that stuff for years when I was there. And I'm like, okay, Dude, talking to him, it's like, yeah, we don't have any 25-story buildings. I'm not going to fight a fire in the 50th floor of the MGM, but like taking his concepts and breaking it down to, our 4 and 3-story, low and mid-rise buildings was like, hey man, it's similar concepts. Yeah, we don't need to throw 100 guys at it, but like it helped to hear it from a guy who does it, who's fought actual high-rise fires, has built actual high-rise packs. We're like, I watched a YouTube video and like I kind of think this is how it works. Like I can tell you, like in my entire career, to be on the third floor, I've never had a third floor fire. I've never been above the second floor. So like to say that I've done it, I'm like, I don't, but we got to prepare for it because we have, I don't know, 20 or 30 potential 3-story buildings here, So it's like the potential's there. To say that we've never done it, we need to be more proactive than reactive. So I think that outside training helps with that too, is you can start looking at proactive approaches to things that maybe you don't know, or maybe something you do, you get to look at how they're doing it, and maybe you can go back and say, oh man, they load their hose this way. Like that's how we got the Minuteman. We started doing the attack pack style, Minuteman loads for the for our attack packs, and I was like, why don't we just, everybody knows how to dump these off from the compartment, why aren't we just loading Minutemans on the truck? And Mike Hathaway was like, I don't know. Like the triple fold is driving me nuts. I can't get it right. Like we spend more time loading. He's like, well, what if we try it? And like in a month, we have Minuteman loads on the truck now. And everybody's deploying them amazingly. So, seeing how other people do things helps you to branch out. It gives you that passion. And most importantly, I think it gives you that brotherhood, network, sisterhood, that if you need something or you're struggling, you got people from around the country. I mean, look, we linked up because I started listening to your podcast. Saw that you were at a conference with some of my friends, and I was like, dude, this dude knows what he's talking about because he's not just trying to put the best guys on his podcast. He's going to conferences and he's living it right now, man. And so like it just starts the friendship. And now we talk what once every couple of weeks, but like we ended up like we've never ever had to have a crazy discussion because we're on the same page of everything we're talking about, man.
No, you're right. I mean, that's how it works. And that's what I tell people, like, just it's just always good to get out of your comfort zone, talk to other firemen. You will find out you're not the only one with the same problems, same issues, the same sort of guy that they describe. You're like, oh, I have one of those. Like it's just awesome. And then the caveat is all those people that are there want to actually be there. They're not forced to be there. Some of them pay their own way, take their own time off, and they just want to be there to have fun and get good at the job. Like, there's no greater feeling than that.
I think this, the going to the incident management symposium was one of the first conferences in my career that I've had fully funded by the department. And even a kudos to Chief Slayer because he hooked us up with some extra spots too, for some of the work we've been doing down here. So like we gave up spots I was able to take 4 guys with me. And I took 2 guys that had never been to conferences and they were just like mind blown, like eyes open, like, how come we don't do this more often? It's like, dude, you guys all think I'm crazy when I'm like, hey man, I'm packing up and I'm going to Texas for the weekend. Like, you paid your way to go to Texas? Like, yeah, man. Like, this is where I'm going. Like, oh, you're gonna go take nozzle forward in Phoenix again? You've already taken nozzle forward. I'm like, I've taken nozzle forward 3 times. Every time I've taken it with Aaron, I have learned something different. You know, Copper State. We did Copper State. Went up there twice. Like, yeah, I took classes again. And I always tell Slayer, like, hey, which class do I need to take? And he's like, oh, you've already taken this? Go take this one. Go learn from these guys, So it's super awesome. Like, I'm going to Gone to Texas in 6 weeks, man. I'm super stoked. Never been to that conference. It's right in my brother-in-law and sister's backyard. So super excited to head to Arlington and go see what those guys have. Get to meet Kyle Romagus and all that crew out there. So if you're not branching out to just and it kind of like I said, it reaffirms your skills as a firefighter. Like, hey man, I'm not crazy. Hey, I'm good at what I do and I'm going to get better. And then bringing it back to your department. Like, I'm very big on that. Like, if whatever I can bring back, I'm going to bring back. And if I can make us better, I want us to be better. Like, and I know there's people who look in our circles that are like, man, these guys are just assholes. These one percenters, they're always talking the talk and blah, blah, blah. It's like, hey, man, like, at the end of the day, I'm born and raised right where I am. Like, I'm literally on the same street that I grew up on. My fire station, I could probably throw a baseball right now and hit the back of our station one. And I worked out of our station one. So I worked in my neighborhood. My grandma lives 4 houses down. My parents live 2 streets over. this is my community. I want to bring the best and be the best. And I want us to be the best for our community because at the end of the day, we're all they have. When they call
Exactly.
us on their worst day, they call us and we all get mad. Oh, they call this for our smoke detector. Oh, they call this because they burned a pot on stuff. You know what? They're calling us. They're not calling the cops, they're not calling anybody else. They're calling us. Whatever problem they have, bee problems, snake problems, dead deer on the side of the road problem. You know, like we are what they call. So yeah, we need to be the best always. And we should always be pushing the envelope.
Love it, man. Love it. Love the message behind it. I mean, it's yeah, you will find some one percenters that are arrogant, that think that they're better than the most. But the majority of the firemen that I've met, man, are truly humble. That they will, if they don't, they have fucked up in the past. You know what I mean? Like they're not afraid to fail. They'll tell you things that they've learned from successes and failures. But overall, man, I just want to be good. Like I don't want to, especially in today's society, man, where if something's going down in your first due, if there is a fire, a major incident, trust me, the news doesn't have to be there. Somebody will be filming you, and you don't want your, I'm sure everybody, most, I would say most departments, your last name is on your jacket. If not, your department name's on there, okay? Nobody wants to be that guy that's on Hit It Hard from the Yard or all these little parody fire Instagram, Facebook pages, and you've looked like a fool. Like nobody should want that to happen. So why not be good at your job? I mean, that's what the citizens expect. That's what you get paid for. And so I also look at it too. We have a decent number of firemen who complain about pay. Like, I understand not every organization, every department can pay what like the big cities pay. But if your organization is paying you a fairly decent salary and you show up and you can't throw a 24 or you can't stretch a 200-foot pre-connect right, but you're bitching that you want more money. If I was the fire chief, I'd be like, look at this video. So you want more money. You want me to get you more money, go to town or whatever city council for more money, but you're doing shit like this. Like you gotta hold yourself accountable.
100%, man. So, like, I think you touched on a few things. So, I won't be perfect. Like, I'm a jerk at times. I come off as a jerk. I'm very blunt. I'm very brash. I call myself, we joke that I'm the HR nightmare some days. I tell my captains all the time, like, I'm sorry, you got to deal with me because I wear my emotions on my face. My captain, Sam, I'm just going to say it now, Captain Sam Marshall. Always tells me I got to work on my neutral face because he literally says you can sit in the meeting and however that meeting is going or however our conversation is going, my face starts to tell what the next comment's going to be out of my mouth. So I have no problem speaking up sometimes. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it gets me in more trouble than I want. But that being said, I also get told a lot, hey, you have a lot of passion for the job. I love the fire service. I've always put the fire service first sometimes. Lately, that has taught me that, you know, you have to have that work-life balance with your wife and your kids and all that. And kudos to my wife who puts up with me when I'm misaligned. But, you know, I have a lot of passion. I expect a lot. And I don't know if it's because of my journey into the fire service coming in with nothing and I've had to work for everything I've had. But I know I can have a little bit more grace too. I need to be a little bit better with how I do it. And I think starting to see that in my older career. But you're right, man. Like we got guys who complain about pay. I'll tell you this, and this is an honest statement. If you ask me how much what my hourly was 90% of the time of my entire career, I usually never knew. I would barely know when we would get our pay raise and we'd have to go in and sign the action form. And I'd be like, oh, that's what I make. Like even when I left the district coming to the city, they were like, okay, well, here's your pay. And I'm like, well, how much of a pay cut is that for you? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I didn't know. And even right now, I have a rough idea of where I'm at. And I tell people all the time, we're going through this right now. You know, we have promotions coming up. And people are just like, oh, you're going to promote, you're going to test. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. You know, not to play coy, but it's like, you know, I'm not. My big question to guys today is, why do you want to promote? And if the first words out of their mouth are money, I'm like, eh, wrong. Stop talking to me. Like, I love you, brother, but you got your values misaligned, man. Like, we're not in this job for money. You know, We get paid good. Could we always get paid a little bit better? Absolutely. With the cost of everything going up with COVID and all that, yes. And coming from a district to a city, right? So at the fire district, it's straight fire. There's no streets, there's no refuse, there's no money comes in, money goes to fire. We're not sharing pots. Coming over to the city, I'm like, wait, what? Like, we're scheduled to get a fire truck. They're like, well, we needed two garbage trucks. I'm like, but that's the fire money. And they're like, it is, but we realigned it and shipped it over here, or IT needed this, or I, you know, streets needed that, or HR needed this. And it's like, whoa, the sharing thing. I'm not, you know, I go from a 50 person department to a 500 plus employee city where we're all sharing some stuff too. You know, I mean, we still have our fire stuff, but like monies get shared. And I'm like, I don't understand this. And they're like, yeah, well, if we give you a 2% pay raise, well, now we got to give everybody a 2% pay raise. We're like, okay. And like, yeah, 2% pay raise could be like $700,000. I'm like, okay. And they're like, that we don't have. It's like, oh, well, okay. So, but I mean, our city, they do a good job. We've been getting pay raises. They do the best to try and keep us around here. But sometimes we all have to understand too, we are a smaller department and we work in one of the best states of automatic aid. If you go to the Valley, you know, volume two, and the guys at Phoenix, Mesa, the big major departments up there, they work as one department almost. And so we do lose guys to the Valley. It's just the way it is. You know, I was one that considered going up there. I can name off probably 10 plus guys that came from our department that go up there. So we're always going to be battling that because they have the big city budgets and all that stuff that they can pay their guys a little bit more. But I'll tell you this, we don't have crap gear. You know, we have nice gear. We have nice equipment on our trucks. We have all of our trucks are relatively new. We're getting ready to build our new engine one. We got three ambulances that are on order right now to replace all three of our front lines. We just got a brand new 107 foot Pierce Ascendant 2 years ago. So we're running a top of the line truck. You know, we can't complain. Like it'd be one thing if we had no pay and terrible equipment. So I think our chiefs do a good job of, if they can't pay us as much as they'd like, they make sure we have good equipment to do our job. And there's no excuses. I mean, we just made the whole switch to Key Sniper with Elkhart smoothbores, you know, and we just bought the whole XD lineup for two of our apparatus. The trucks will get it. Our two ladder trucks will get it next year. It's like, I mean, that's 50 grand we just dropped to give us low pressure hoses and stuff to be better at our job. So, like you said, if we're not being better at our job, it's like, why do they need to buy us this stuff then? So we need to train, we need to be better at it. And then if we can keep proving like, hey man, this is why we need this, maybe our pay will come up. But if you get into this job for the pay, you're going to be sadly mistaken of how much that pays. It's not much. It's pennies on the dollar some days.
No, that's facts. I mean, it's funny too you said it, because once I hear that's their reasoning, it's like automatic turnoff. Like, I have tuned you out. You're done. Because what, you know, I don't want to repeat, you know, try to repeat what you said, but we have people here that like, this is not a profession to come and make money. Like, this is a profession where you're gonna make hopefully decent money, hopefully livable wage money. But to say I'm in it for the money, it's like, bro, you got your priorities are fucked up. Like,
And I
seriously.
love it too. Sometimes it's like it's the single guy with no kids. He's living in a, you know, super big house. He's got his big old lifted truck. And it's like, hey man, like, try having three kids, a wife, a home, a mortgage, all this. Like, you're asking for more money. You're literally living at home and can control everything you need. Like, I got kids. I got a 16, a 10-year-old, and a 4-year-old. They take care of everything that I have money-wise.
No, that's facts. I mean, it's also like, live within your means. Like, you don't need to go out and buy like an $80,000 truck and then go ahead and put like 5 grand worth of accessories, big tires, lift kits, all that. Like, I
I mean, they
mean,
all look
live,
nice.
yeah, they look nice, but those payments ain't cheap.
When your payment's almost as much as my house payment, like, hey man, we got problems.
Exactly. That's
I
where
see
you
a
know
bunch of these
you're.
guys when they tell us our truck payments, I'm all, dude, that's more than my house payment right now. Like, no, thank you.
It's fucking crazy. It's wild, man. I love it though. I love it. I love the message. I love, yeah, the whole thing, man. Let's hit on what's one thing a what's one thing a department or whatever the case may be, what's one thing that they could do for a realistic training on a small budget?
Man, you got to be creative. Everybody hears that. Oh, you got to be creative. How? Even the simplest fact of you get an alarm call or you get that very benign EMS call that doesn't require everybody's all hands. If you're in an awkward building or something that you're not familiar with, like stretch a line, go do a walkthrough real quick. Do a 360. Talk about things. It does drive me nuts when we're busy some days and Cap's like, all right, we're gonna pull a line on this one. I'm like, oh God, we've been getting our butts kicked all day, Cap, and we're dropping a line right now for training. But I looked over the years now, it's paid off of like, especially when we go to like awkward buildings and stuff that we don't get our feet in all the time. Like, don't get me wrong, there's certain areas of the city born and raised here, that like if you walk into one house, you've pretty much walked in. There's only two other floor plans, so you kind of know the layout of those homes. But we definitely have some custom construction around here. Our lower end of the city that have all been modified since the 50s, 60s, 70s. We get into some of the homes where it's like, hey man, did you even notice that there wasn't an attic on this build on this house? And the guy's like, what? I'm like, yeah, it's a flat roof. Like, but the house, two houses next door both have attics. So teaching guys that stuff. So I think definitely just getting out in your first do. I'm a big proponent of you got to own your first do. When I teach, I usually have a slide in there. And it usually has a picture of my kids and my wife at our wedding. And it has, a couple pictures of my family. I say, hey, man, these people live in my first do, or they live in your first do. If you don't know your first do, you're putting my family at risk. And you know me. I said, imagine if you don't know these people. Like, we have to own it like we know everybody in our first do, like they're our family. You need to know where your water supplies are at. You need to know where your awkward construction houses are at. You need to know where your high hazard areas are at in your first do, and train on those. But getting creative, I mean, we all do it. We pull hose in the back alley. We pull hose in the parking lot. There's value in that, right? You can get your speed. You can get your reps. You can get your efficiency in it. But then just throwing curveballs in it, like, okay, hey man, you got a car right here. You guys can't pull this hose more than 10 feet from the truck. What do you do? Throwing curveballs at guys of making them like see these obstacles that you're gonna deal with because they're like, well, why? And I'm like, hey man, I've never pulled a hose in an open parking lot, even for a car fire. Like a car fire, I've had like five cars around every time or on the side of the road. Like I've never had it in an open parking lot. So you got to understand how to go around obstacles, long stretches, the or unordinary stuff. I would say 90% of us at any point in time should be able to pull, like you said, a 200-foot pre-connect to the front door with nobody around at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay, what are you going to do when it's dark out and you didn't notice that stem wall over there and now you got your hose kinked over here? What are you going to do when you throw that ladder? And this even happened to me during my probationary review. I got so tunnel vision. So when I came over, I had to go through probationary year all over again.
Okay.
And I treated it like I was a brand new guy. And I tell people all the time, man, it was one of the best experiences of my life. Going back through probation, I got a chance to kind of correct my career, make some changes, and I took it serious because there's a lot of guys who are like, oh, well, you were an engineer over there. Like, you trained so and so and so. I was like, nope. Hey, I'm the new guy. Yeah, you're going to treat me a little differently because I have experience, but like, no, I'm still following the same steps as everybody else. I get to my training drill, I throw the 24 footer, I get done. I'm proud of it. Looks great. Like, pff, quick. Like, let's roll. Chief walks up, he goes, hey, like, what's up? He goes, what happens if they come out that door and run into that ladder? I was all, what door? He's all, the door you just did the ladder in front of. I was like, I look, I'm all, man. And he laughed, but I was like, he goes, bet you won't make that same mistake again. So, nope, you're right, Chief. I totally didn't even think about the gym door that I just blocked. But he's like, that could have been the front door. That could have been the Charlie side door in a house. And I'm like, nope, facts. You are right, sir. I blocked the door and could it happen? Hopefully not, but yeah, there's a potential that somebody comes barreling out of there. And now we lost the ladder. So it was
Right.
just funny of like, if you're not out training and you're not out trying things, you don't know what you can and can't do. I always tell people the biggest budget thing that you can do, know your truck, know your equipment. That's the easiest training to do with no money because you already have the equipment. How does it work? How do you maintain it? What are some out of the box ways we can do it? Okay, here's what the IFSTA manual says. Here's what the SOPs say. Okay, let's talk. What if we need to cut this? Can we cut that with a K-12? Well, the manufacturer said, I don't care what the manufacturer. Can we cut that with the K-12? Can we cut it with the Sawzall? You know, we've been using Sawzalls. I have a NASCAR background, so I work at the racetrack up here. So we do a little extrication, a little different than what we do. You know, we carry all of our hydraulic tools, but I can tell you right now, I can cut up a next gen cup car, most of it with a Sawzall. That's my job at the track. I cut up with, and I brought that back, and my captain was like, "What are you going to do?" I said, "Watch, I'm going to take this whole B post out with the Sawzall." He's like, "No, you're not." I was like, "Watch me." I had the B post out, and he was like, "Holy cow!" I was like, "Yeah, these Sawzalls will cut through anything right now, especially with the blades we have." So just showing guys like, "Hey, man, understand how your equipment works, how your equipment can fail, how to overcome that." Those are the best things because at the end of the day, that's all we have. Some days is just the equipment we have. We don't even have our own real training ground. Like we don't have our own burn tower. We have a Connex box we burn out of. The three-story burn towers down south takes us about 20 minutes to get there, or we have to go up to the military base to get any multi-company stuff on multi-floors. So we have to definitely get innovative of ladder throws out the back. You know, we built VES props at the station. I think it cost us, I don't know, $100 in some random door that we found in the trash. Built ourselves a VES prop with a door prop, you know. And I always tell people, look at the things that are our bread and butter. You have to be good at what we do with the bread and butter. You have to be good with your hose stretches. You got to be good with your ladder throws, and you got to be good with your forcible entry. You know, if you're not good with those three things on the fire ground, you're probably the most ineffective fire company that's ever been invented. You know, oh, but I can ventilate. Okay. How often are we jumping on roofs right now and ventilating, especially on low staffing? I can tell you right now in my career, I can probably count the amount of times I've vertical ventilated on two hands. And I work on a truck company and we laugh about our truck. We are literally an engine with a ladder on top of it. So we've been first due more often than not to stretch the line, and we don't go to the roof very often. Not saying that we couldn't. But it's just not something we do because we have all these other tactical priorities we need to deal with. We can ventilate, we can hydraulically ventilate, we can horizontally ventilate, you know, with VES, we can ventilate that, you know. So we do all this that we don't need to go to the roof. So being proficient at ventilation is great, but if you couldn't throw the ladder to get there and you can't start your chainsaw or understand, you know, your chainsaw is not starting correctly, well, how good of a ventilation guy are you then if you can't even master the two basic things you need to get onto the roof? So mastering the basics, man. Mastering the basics, thinking outside the box. That's what I
Man,
think we all have to do right now.
this man's preaching the good words. I mean, some might not want to hear it, but it's all facts. I mean, I hate to say it. Like you said, sometimes you got to be blunt. Sometimes you got to be a dick to people for them to get it. Like, I try not to be. I try to explain things, but there are just some people sometimes that just don't get it, don't want to get it. And my question to them is, why are you here? Just go,
Agree.
quit. Like, if this job is terrible, if you hate the department, if you hate the people you work with, just quit. Like, ain't nobody holding a gun to your head saying stay here.
No, and I mean, I think that like that kind of segues into when you always ask, you know, what does aggressive mean to you? You know, that tends into that where that becomes a huge debate at the kitchen table. And I have some pretty good takes on that too. If you want to get into that.
Sure, shoot, go.
So, you know, yeah, I've been, I'll tell you, like, I even did some research with some of your older podcasts. Like, all right, I don't want to be cookie cutter of what everybody else has said. So I've probably even backtracked some older podcasts just to be like, all right, what's everybody saying with this, you know? But I think that's the problem is you're bringing in like-minded individuals. So I think we all have a very similar way of looking at aggression, right? And I tell people all the time, like, you hear the word aggressive, especially here, like, you know, Chief Brunsini, Phoenix Fire. They were one of the most aggressive fire companies and fire departments in the country for decades, right? And it paralleled over into the valley, and then all the older guys that I kind of came up under all preached, you know, the Brunsini way, which is not a bad thing. Like I got to come in when I came in, I worked for a very old school chief, a very old school captain, and very old school battalion chief. Like they started in the early 70s, and it was like a foot in your back if you weren't moving fast enough. It was a radio upside the head. It was a foot in your ass, and you were going. And there was spit and chew and everything coming at you. You got cussed out on the fire ground at times if you weren't moving with a purpose. I don't think we need that per se, But I definitely learned early in my career, like, hey man, we get a job and it's showing fire. What the hell? You know, in my first fire, I remember, I can still remember it. We're an open cab. We used to run an open cab as our reserve engine. So the back two back guys are in an open cab. It's a summer night. My senior firefighter, also, oh, you'll never be in the back of the truck by yourself. You never be in the back of the truck by yourself. And I'm like, all right, cool. Yeah, nope. That night we get a fire. I think I just turned 20. I don't even think my son was born yet. So it was like early 2007. I get geared up. My senior firefighter's driving for the day. You know, we have a move up BC, or no, we have a move up captain for the day. Or somehow our chief wasn't there. Our captain wasn't there. We had a, oh yeah, we had a, he was covering him. We had a different captain. And I'm like in the back, and I'm like, dang it, dude. Jared, you always told me I'd never be in the back by myself. What do I do? And so I don't know. I'm not masked up yet. I'm like, got my stuff on. And we pull up to these two just rip roaring double wide trailers. And the captain gets out and he looks at me and he's like, where's your mask? I'm like, I don't know. And so like I'm scrambling, getting after it, you know, getting yelled at, but going after it. But like I learned early on, like we were short staffed, so you had to get after it. Like if you showed up and you were going slow on the fire ground, we were gonna lose fires. And in the district, we didn't have a lot of water supply. So you had to be real intentional with where you put water, you had to be real intentional. If you didn't get after it and you let this thing grow because you're taking time to stretch your line and all that crap, before you know it, you know, you had a two room 50% involved. We're fully involved. Now we're defensive. Well, now we don't even have the water to do that. So we had to be fast. So I think it gets a negative term in the fire service. You know, it's we're viewed as brash, crazy, unsafe, unprofessional, you know, the uneducated. And we see it all on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, whatever, all these John Wayne type guys, right? But we never know the backstory. Like, what was the backstory? What led to them to be like that? You know, and we've researched them, and I'm like, you could show two different clips, and it's like, well, this group's saying that they're aggressive and crazy, and this group's over saying, like, hey man, no, they're just putting the risk on the line. So the fire service, I think, has brought the safety blanket out of like, that's what we hide behind. Well, that's just too aggressive. We can't do that. We can't vertically ventilate because it's just too aggressive. It's unsafe. It's like, what makes it unsafe? The timetable? The skill, the training, the equipment, like, what is it? Because I've learned through networking and obviously going to other conferences, is like, usually you're lacking one of those two areas. And that's why we feel it's unaggressive. We don't train on it enough. We don't have the right equipment for it. So we're going to just say, that's out of our wheelhouse. It's too aggressive. But it's like, okay, but if we had a good ladder company that got to the roof in 2 minutes and we had top-notch saws that, you know, they could get up there and cut and they had plenty of training, like, is it now aggressive or is it just super educated now that they're good at what they do and they're fast? To me, you know, it's aggressive as being fast, effective, and efficient on all your scenes, right? If it's running, it's running. If it's jogging, it's jogging. If it's it, you got to read the fire scene. And I tell all the new guys, you get off that truck, you have to have it in your head that you're about to go 120 miles an hour. But if the scene calls for you to only need to go 60, go 60. If the scene calls for you to go 150, you better be going 150. You got to read the scene. I was showing up to a single wide, single family residence that, you know, one room's on fire and we could potentially put it out with a can. Yeah, we're not blowing through that door at 150 miles an hour. Are we showing two rooms on fire with some of our newer construction where the houses are literally a yard apart and we have potential victims on the second floor? Yeah, we're 150 miles an hour, dude. I'm sprinting. I'm going gung ho. And I think the biggest thing that throws our aggressive style out is that, you know, we forget what that one mantra of, you know, an incident scene that we always say is we're going to risk a lot to save a lot. So my counter to everybody lately is, okay, well, what's a lot? And they're like, huh? What's a lot? What are you willing to risk to save a lot? What does saving a lot mean to you? Is it a house? Is it one person? Is it two person? Is it nobody? You know, what are you willing to risk? Well, I don't know. Are you willing to risk your life? Are you willing to risk, you know, only breaking an arm or potentially breaking a leg? And people give me a weird look, and I kind of throw that at people a lot now. Because I know what I'm willing to risk, you know, and I think my wife knows what I'm willing to risk. I know my boys know what I'm willing to risk. They're in the other room, and we've even talked about this before, is they know that if I'm on shift and it's going down, they know I love them and I'm going to put everything on the line to make sure somebody else can go home, which might lead to me not coming home, whether it's one of my brothers or my sisters or a stranger in the community. I know what my all in is, you know, and Chief Slayer has a coin now, you know, it says AIMF, and it says all in, motherfucker. That's what it is, man. Like in this job, there's a point where you have to say, I'm going all in. You got to be that guy. I love being the company that when we show up on scene, the BC knows, like, hey, man, they're good. We got them. My guys are here, you know, and it's not knocking anybody else's company. But like, I want to be on those crews that when we roll up, if we're third due, these BCs are like, whoa, get that truck up here now. Let's go. Get these guys up here. And then he knows whatever tasks he assigns us, it's going to get done. And we have a great relationship with a lot of the BCs around here. You know, when things are going down, I want our company to be the company that's called. And we're going balls out. We're coming through the window. We're going to cut the damn side of the house off. We're going to push down the hallway. We're going to pull the 2.5. We're going to drag your butt out. And I'm going to die on the line trying to get you. Unfortunately, we all work with guys who they're all in is potentially like, yeah, man, if I break my finger, I'm going to the ER. Oh, man. I'm on my second bottle. Like, I need a rehab stint. Like, bro, we don't have anybody in backup. Like, we gotta go. You know, and I used to be a little more laid back when I was a driver because you know, I thought like the guys before me, like, we drove, we got to the scene. I didn't have my jacket on. You asked me where my pack was, I'd be like, I don't know, it's in the truck. So, you know, like I was in my pants, my hat, I had my gloves on. That was it. I was ready to roll. Man, I watched a Mayday one time where I was like, yo, that driver could have got that guy at the window. That driver could have got that guy at the window. And ever since then, it's like, man, I'm gonna have my jacket on. My pack's gonna be within 5 feet of me with my mask on and my helmet sitting on top of it. Trust me, I don't like pumping with my helmet on. If I'm outside, I don't want my damn helmet on. I hate that. But I want my helmet on my pack so that, and I know I've trained myself that if I could get my pack and my helmet on in a minute, I could be at that window to help get you out. Because I don't want to go home knowing that I didn't do everything I could to get you to go home to your family. And so I come off at times as aggressive and as brash, but man, I know what my worth is and I know what my willing to do is that I'm going to give everything I got for my brothers and sisters to go home. And the community, you know, that's what we're here for. Not everybody has that. So I just hope guys that are listening to this, you know, really look back in your evaluation of what is risk a lot, save a lot mean to you, not to your department. What does it mean to you? And have you actually even explained that to your spouse and your children? That they know if dad doesn't come home or mom doesn't come home and they hear that you were in there rescuing, they know, hey, dad put it all on the line so that, you know, my best friend and I, we were on the same crew. He's my captain. Danny knew that I was going to put it all on the line so he could go home to Lindsay, you know, Jax, Taylor, and Bennett. You know, I know all my crew's kids' names, and vice versa. You know, my wife knew that Danny was going to put on live so that, you know, I could go home to my wife, to my three boys, you know, something we don't think about. And the time to figure that out is not when the call comes, not when the Mayday comes, not when the Rico. I hope I never hear a Mayday in my entire career. But I know if I hear it, I'm looking right at that BC saying, you better send us right now. And that's a mentality I think guys got to have. That Mayday goes down, instead of getting that pucker factor, you better be stopping me and my company from grabbing tools and getting to work. Because I guarantee you, we would probably be breaking some protocol. We're going in and we're going to get that guy out or try.
Boom. Excuse the French, but motherfucking mic drop. That's what this job is. It's about laying it all on the line. It's about pushing yourself to the limit. And the time to figure that out, like you said, is not on the fucking fire ground. It's at training. It's when you're working out. It's when you're at the stations. I just don't get how people can't see themselves at their worst point when you have to make that push. Like I said, there are some days, man, I don't want to do like a certain gear workout, but when you can figure out, when you can get that mindset of telling, when your mind says, hey, I'm tired, that's only like 40%. You have more in you. Just fucking keep going. Like, you have to keep going. It will pay off dividends on the fire ground. When it's hot, fires don't stop when it's hot, especially where you're at. The heat in that area, in that region, you can't just go, oh, time out, guys. I need to stop. I need to go get an IV. I need to get a bottle of water. Like, that's, you have to figure your shit out. And you said it, oh, you couldn't have said it any fucking better than you just did. And we have people that don't understand that. Their version of all in, like you said, is, yeah, all right, I'll see how much I got, left of me. No, fucking let's go.
So we brought this up actually. So I taught Officer Quarterly to our captains and our engineers when we brought in Nozzle Forward. Brought that in about 2 years ago, taught, put all of our captains and officers through it to teach them. And in there, like you mentioned, mindset and explaining to your crews what the expectations are. But I kind of hit a reversal in there. So you got a firefighter, and I, again, most of my guys, they, most of my captains and engineers, they know, like, okay, Matt's been around. He's not just BSing me. We've seen him grow up in the fire service. He's decent at what he does. They all say I'm good at what I do. I'm like, no, I'm still learning everything. You guys are the captains. But I sat there and I said, this is where it's going to get crazy. And they're like, what? I said, there's a point where you have to shut up and listen. And they're like, looking at me. And I'm like, because as a nozzleman, I'm going to tell you what I need. You have to trust me. I'm on the nozzle. You guys have to listen. And we have to build this trust that you have trained me to do what I need to do. But I also need you to listen and trust that what I'm telling you I need, I don't need you. So my first captain, like I said, I'm back with him, Sam. When we first started working together, I'm teaching him nozzle forward. I'm on the line. We're doing drills. He's trying to figure me out. And Sam and I kind of worked together, but never really were on crews together. And so he's like up on me. He's like running into me. I'm like, Sam, get the hell off of me. Like, back up, dude. And he's like, what? I'm just backing you up. I'm like, no, like, give me 5 or 6 feet, man. Like, get off of me. I can manage the line, man. And he was like, what? And he starts watching it and he's like, damn, okay. I was like, yeah. I was like, I don't need you up on me. I'm gonna tell you what I need. If I need more hose, if we need to stop, if I need you to help me push, like, let me work, man. Like, but when you're up on me, you gotta trust that what I'm doing is working. And it carried over from that point forward is like it's a dialogue between your firefighter and your captain, your driver and your captain. When I was driving for Danny, man, Danny and I, we would bicker like husband and wife some days in the truck. Da-da-da. I'm like, hey, you captain, I drive, dude. I'll tell you where we're going. You just tell me how to get there if it's somewhere I don't know. Well, you need to. I drive, you captain, and we would laugh. But we had that dialogue and that mindset. It's like if it came to the truck. Guys would come to him and be like, he'd be like, hey, is that truck problem? That's Matt. You go talk to Matt. He didn't stand there. Hey, that's a captain that I'm in front of. You go to Danny, man. That's you deal with him. But these captains and building that mindset where we can have a dog. Sam and I pulled up to a fire early on. He's like, pre-connect, inch and three quarter, grab it. And I stopped and I was like, you sure you don't want a 2.5? And he like perks up, he's like, what? He looks, he's like, oh, yeah, 2.5, right? And I tell all these firefighters when I teach the academy, these captains are like, hey man, don't get mad if your firefighter legit questions you for a quick second. It's not to be a dick, it's not to be undermining, it's just to confirm, like, you've taught me things and my instincts are saying this. We all preach it. We want these forward firefighter thinking guys, right? I want you to be thinking, be stepping ahead of the game. You need to be this, you need to be that. But then when somebody does it's like, boom, shut your mouth, do what I say. And it's like, well, hold on. You're preaching one thing, but then when the shit hits the fan and I'm questioning you, and not even a mean way, but just confirming that this is what you want, now you're shutting me down. So now we just get firefighters that shut down. And, well, Cap said this. I'm not going to say anything until he tells me what to do. And I've had guys where it's like, why'd you guys pull that? And they're like, well, Cap said. And I'm like, but I didn't think it would work. And I'm like, well, then why didn't you say something? Or at least bring it up in the AAR, like, Cap, all right, you said this. I was thinking this. Oh, yeah, I didn't think about it. We got to have that dialogue and that mutual respect of like, I'm not questioning you. And I always tell the captains that I start working for, hey, man, I'm probably going to ask you a question at some point. Like, how do you want this? And if you give me the same order back the second time exactly, no questions asked. If in that fire, Sam would have said, inch and three quarter, Matt, copy, inch and three quarter, we're rolling. Like, but at least I put it on the line, like, hey, man, I'm thinking 2.5. He gets a split second to be like, yay or nay. And we go back at it. And that starts in training. That starts in that firehouse. That starts in that having that trust of our guys. what we need, what we got to do. That way the captains understand when we're asking questions, it's not, if the younger guys start trying to build that forward-thinking mindset of, hey man, you got to be a step ahead. And I challenge drivers. I'm a big guy who teaches driving. I teach at the college here. I'm one of our DO instructors. I tell these guys, you are a step ahead of the game. Like you're on the outside, you need to be listening to radio traffic. If the captain's interior and you saying he's having a hard time getting a knockdown, or they need this, or they need ventilation, like you should be pulling fans. You should be listening, like, hey man, that engine three quarter ain't working. They're probably gonna pull a second engine three quarter with a second new truck coming up. They might be considering getting the deck gun up, or they might be getting a ladder up, or we might be getting this. So try to teach guys, be a step ahead and be forward thinking. Think about what we got going on and taking it all in. And then it's, when you relay it back to the captain, just asking questions, you know, understanding that this is what's going to make our company successful is having that dialogue. And I see the crews that do it. If you have a good dialogue with your crew, man, when shit does hit the fan, there is no talking. I mean, there's a lot of times you could put Sam, Dave, and I on a line. We don't have to talk. They know what I need, I know what they need, and we're getting to work. And there's no questions asked. Some people don't like that. I'm like, dude, if you train with your crew enough, sometimes you don't even need to think. Like, I already know, hey, somebody better have a New York hook walk it up because Sam's gonna want to pull siding. Hey, somebody better have a trash hook because we're gonna pop ceiling. Hey, we better have the forcible entry tools ready to go. That door better start getting opened. You better not wait for, if he comes around that corner and you're not working on that door, or that door's not open, you're gonna hear about it. So like, it's go time, man.
Fantastic, bro. Shit. The amount of gems that were spilled out today in this conversation, man. I mean, it's just, if you can't take away one thing, I mean, there's more than one, but if you can't take away at least one thing that's been talked about in this interview, man, like you need some soul searching for real. Like I don't want to keep repeating it, but listen to how we have had this conversation, and hopefully you could take away some stuff out of it. Before we head out, man, is there anything else you want to say? Because I'm pretty sure I have some topics that's going through my head. So I'm pretty sure if you're okay with, I'm probably gonna have to have a part two with you.
Hey.
So, but before we head out, is there anything else you want anyone to know?
You know, I just tell people all the time, like, it's a journey. We all think it's a sprint. We all think it's gonna, you know, it needs to be quick. We're all type A personalities. You know, we all think everything's gonna be quick, 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 quick. You gotta have some patience in your career. You gotta have some patience in your life. And I'm not the most patient person. I tell people that all the time. Like I said, I've blown up relationships, I've blown up friendships, bridges, everything like that. Take the time to embrace the suck. Take the time to embrace everything that's going on. Have that healthy work-life balance. You know, like I said, I love my wife dearly. She puts up with me and all my harebrained ideas. When I get sucked into work, when my mental health is at its weakest points, you know, my wife, kudos to Stephanie. She puts it all on the line for our family. Picks up the slack when I'm not there. My boys, Brandon, Corbin, Maddox, they know when dad's working on something that he's all in. But at the end of the day, they make it so much fun for me to enjoy life too. They all play sports, so I get my break time to go watch them play sports. But you know, without them helping her hold the house down, man, I wouldn't be able to do anything I have without that. And like I said, to my mentors, Chief Slayer, Aaron Fields, Cody Clark, everybody, you know, they've been world of help for me, man. If you're not looking outside at even reading books, you know, Book of Andy, if you haven't started at the Book of Andy, and if I'm just saying the Book of Andy and it's foreign to you right now, you better Google that because you shouldn't be in the fire service. That book is amazing. It's eye-opening. It shows that what we do hasn't changed in decades. We just decide to take the shiny trinkets, as Aaron would say, and put them in front of what the actual hardcore work that our forefathers and sisters have done to like legit make the fire service what it is. You're gonna have good days, you're gonna have bad days. But at the end of the day, you gotta be all in. If you're not all in when you're on shift, that's when everybody gets hurt. And you got to have that mindset, man. When you walk in that door, You got to turn some things off and just get the fuck after it. And if you ain't getting after it, you're going to get left behind.
Oh yeah, no saying. There's nothing else to say. It's just, yeah, mic drop. Love it. Matt, truly appreciate you coming on, talking shop. Like I said, I didn't even hit on most of the stuff that I wanted to hit on with you. So there's gonna be a part two for sure. I'm sure anyone listening, anyone that follows this podcast, you're gonna it's yeah. All I'm gonna say is yeah, you're gonna just I'm sure everything that you said. A lot of individuals would be shaking their head, going, "Yup, he's right. I've dealt with this. This is I've dealt with this problem yesterday, or we continue having these issues." So I love the talk, and I just want to say I appreciate you coming on, man.
Hey man, I appreciate what you're doing for the fire service, man. You and bringing everybody else on, it lets like-minded guys get their message out and just remind everybody, like you said, around the country, like, hey, we're not fighting this alone. We're all a brotherhood, whether we've met before or not. You know, just listening enough is we're all together in this fight to make everything better. You know, mediocrity is not what we want. We want elite athletes. We want elite everything, and we want to be the best. Be that company. Be that guy that when they see you on scene, they know, hey, shit's about to get done.
Like I said, I got nothing else to say, bro. You took the words out of my mouth. So, it's been good, and we'll talk soon.
Absolutely.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.